It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
In talks with President Trump's legal team, special counsel Robert Mueller revealed 52 questions he wants to ask the president. Four topics: Michael Flynn, James Comey, Jeff Sessions, and Donald Trump Jr.'s meeting with a Russian attorney. Among the things Mueller wants to ask, what does President Trump know about calls that General Flynn made with Russian Ambassador Kislyak in late December 2016? And did people associated with the president reach out to Flynn or discuss Flynn seeking immunity or possible pardon? On Comey, Mueller wants to know what was the purpose of the dinner meeting the president had with Comey and whether loyalty was discussed. Also, why President Trump tweeted that Comey better hope there are no tapes. On Sessions, Comey wants to ask President Trump about the attorney general's recusal and the president's reaction to the appointment of a special counsel. And on Don Jr., Comey wants to learn what the president knew regarding the June 9th Trump Tower meeting and when he became aware of it. Also, whether President Trump was aware of outreach by members or former members of his campaign to Russia offering potential assistance. Mueller specifically mentioned Paul Manafort. The White House, which has often weighed in on aspects of the Mueller investigation, wanted no part of this disclosure.
I would refer you to the president's outside personal attorneys.
Sources close to the investigation say the questions were developed in early March in consultations between Mueller's office and the president's outside legal team. President Trump today railed against their disclosure, tweeting, "It was disgraceful that the questions concerning the Russian witch hunt were leaked to the media. No questions on collusion."
All right, that's John Roberts of Fox last night. Sandy Rios with you. That, of course, was the headline of yesterday, published by the New York Times, these 50-something questions, allegedly, that are going to be asked of the president if he agrees to an interview with Robert Mueller. All right, so the question is, who leaked these? Personally, I don't think there's any way that the New York Times leaked these to help President Donald Trump. Some people are saying, oh, it's part of Donald Trump's team leaking that so that to discourage him from doing the interview with Robert Mueller. My understanding is that the president has dug his heels in, does not want to do the interview with Robert Mueller, especially after the invasion of the home and records and abuse of power exacted on his attorney just last week. So I don't think that's really the problem. I actually think that Rudy Giuliani is the new head of his legal team. And according to what I'm reading, former mayor Giuliani is actually, if you can believe what you read, is actually trying to negotiate the possibility of the president testifying. So who knows who leaked that and who thought that would help? Honestly, my gut feeling about this is the reason it was leaked is or published by the New York Times is because the president is making some incredible gains. He's making gains in the polls. In fact, Kim Jong-un just agreed to meet him at the DMZ, the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea, which is what the president had proposed just, I don't think I discussed it with you, but about 36 hours ago. That's what he was saying. He would like to meet with Kim at that demilitarized zone because it would be symbolic. And so now Kim has agreed to do that. So that's a very big deal. That's a very big deal. The president is having... he's having such great success in so many areas. That's what I think this is. That's what I believe this is. It's a way to interject the fact that they are not stopping. And I, Dan Bongino, I'm going to just play this clip. Dan Bongino, former Secret Service agent, was on Fox last night, I think, with Hannity. And I just want to drop in what Dan, his perspective on these questions. Here it is.
Do you see the danger in this? They are not investigating a crime here. They're investigating Donald Trump. There's a difference. They, you know, what you do is, I was a former federal agent. What you do is you investigate a crime and you find people. You don't find people and then go find the crime.
Yeah, that's right. So they're fishing and they're trying to find obstruction of justice because they want to impeach this president. And I think one really insightful thing that happened yesterday, and I'm going to play some clips for you because, and I'm going to try, this is probably the most important thing I'm going to discuss with you today, and I have to do it quickly, so please bear with me. Rod Rosenstein, acting attorney general, who took over the Russian investigation, the Russian collusion, alleged collusion, after Attorney General Jeff Sessions recused himself, Rod Rosenstein appeared at what's called Law Day at Washington Law, I think it's Washington University School of Law. And so it was students in the audience and then professors on the stage. And I have to tell you, before I play any of this, the mockery, the smirking smiles, the arrogance is just dripping. It's really appalling to me. But I'm going to let you hear it. You can't see it, but you can hear it. This is a student asking Rod Rosenstein about impeachment. Here it is.
As you think about the importance of separation of powers on Law Day here, any reaction to the news that certain members of the House Freedom Caucus have talked about drafting up articles of impeachment despite your best efforts to comply with their document requests? Yeah,
they can't even resist leaking their own drafts.
Would you care to elaborate on that?
I saw that draft. I mean, I don't know who wrote it. It really does illustrate, though, a really important principle about the rule of law and a distinction between the way we operate in the department. And we make mistakes. You know, that's not to say we're flawless. But the way we operate in the Department of Justice, if we can accuse somebody of wrongdoing, we have to have admissible evidence and credible witnesses. We need to prepare to prove our case in court. And we have to affix our signature to the charging document. That's something that not everybody appreciates. There's a lot of talk about FISA applications. And many people that I see talking about it seem not to recognize what a FISA application is. A FISA application is actually a warrant, just like a search warrant. In order to get a FISA search warrant, you need an affidavit signed by a career federal law enforcement officer who swears that the information in the affidavit is true and correct to the best of his knowledge and belief. And that's the way we operate. And if it's wrong, sometimes it is, if you find out there's anything incorrect in there, that person is going to face consequences. Sometimes there are innocent errors, but if not, you can face discipline or potentially even prosecution. And so that's the way we operate. You know, we have people who are accountable. And so I just don't have anything to say about documents like that, that nobody has the courage to put their name on and that they leak in that way.
Freedom Caucus, they can't even keep their memos private. They leak it to the press. The Freedom Caucus, they don't even put their name on the document. Well, Matt Gaetz was on Fox last night, and this is what he had to say about that. This is clip five.
Earlier, you played a clip where Rosenstein said no House Republicans would put their name on these articles of impeachment. I think Mr. Rosenstein ought to be more worried about what he's put his name on. For example, the FISA warrant renewal. After the FBI knew that Christopher Steele was lying and was not trustworthy, Rosenstein himself signed the document to spy on an American citizen with no justification. He also put his name on the pleading to silence the whistleblower in the Uranium One case. Now, I'll say this. Rod Rosenstein's understanding of extortion seems to depart from the law. The definition of extortion is forcing someone to do something that they have no legal obligation to do under some threat. Rod Rosenstein has an obligation to follow the law. That's all we want him to do. And what's most telling about his viewpoint are his most recent comments to the New York Times, where he said he doesn't believe that the Congress has a constitutional authority to conduct oversight. I think that means he's not reading Article 1 correctly, particularly our power to appropriate funds, and then, of course, ensure that those funds are used in accordance with the law. Here, the FBI and Department of Justice departed from the law. They did so because they were out to get Donald Trump, and now they want to evade oversight, and it's something we're not going to let them do.
All right, Matt Gaetz is with the Freedom Caucus, and he's referring to another part of that speech that Rosenstein did for Law Day, because it's all pretty funny, you see. Pretty funny, he thinks. So does the moderator. This is Rosenstein talking about being extorted. Here it is.
Because we're not getting the documents fast enough, Shannon. We've
requested... Oh, clip two, sorry.
But I can tell you, there have been people who have been making threats privately and publicly against me for quite some time. And I think they should understand by now the Department of Justice is not going to be extorted. We're going to do what's required by the rule of law, and any kind of threats that anybody makes are not going to affect the way we do our job. We have a responsibility, and we take an oath. That's the whole point. When you take these jobs, you need to be appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate, and that actually is a pretty thorough process. And then you raise your right hand and you swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. You promise to bear true faith and allegiance to the same, and you take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, so help me God, and that's your responsibility. Everybody in the department takes that oath. We have 115,000 employees, and if they violate it, they know they're going to be held accountable, and I know those folks know that I'm not going to violate my oath.
It's my turn to laugh because, of course, Rod Rosenstein has done so many things that are that's why the House Freedom Caucus is trying to push for impeachment for Rod Rosenstein, because he has, you can see his attitude as he deals with these congressmen who are trying to get to the bottom of what's going on. They've been asking for records, you know, the FISA application, more information about that. But he believes they don't have a right to that, even though they have oversight. They don't have a right to that. And of course, no one's going to, I'm not going to extort me. Really? He bears no responsibility to the people of this country who are represented by the congressmen. They are represented by the Freedom Caucus and others who have been tasked with representing us and holding government accountable. But Matt Gaetz goes on to talk about them slow walking documents. And here it is, clip six.
Because we're not getting the documents fast enough, Shannon. We've requested 1.3 million documents, and we've received only a few thousand at a time. That's entirely inappropriate. And again, now Rosenstein has shown his cards. He says he doesn't believe that we have a constitutional ability to even conduct oversight. So here's what I think's happening. I think at the Department of Justice and at the FBI, they know they did wrong in these FISA warrants that were based on false information, where they were not disclosing all the material facts to the court. And so they're hoping that if this just takes long enough, and if they survive to the November elections, there's a chance that Democrats will take control, and then there will be no meaningful oversight. They'll just be a continuation of a witch hunt against the president.
Quickly,
so time is not our friend, and that's why we need to act quickly.
All right, so that's Matt Gaetz again with Shannon Bream last night on Fox. And Rosenstein, interestingly enough, you just have to hear this. The question is basically, do you think, sir, there's a threat to the rule of law right now? Here is clip four.
Today is Law Day, and given that, I think it's appropriate to ask, what do you think is the most serious threat to the rule of law in America today?
I don't think there's any threat to the rule of law in America today. The reason for that is that the rule of law in America is protected by two things, the Constitution and the culture.
There's no threat. I don't think there's any threat to the rule of law today. No, what are you talking about? There's not possibly. There's no threat to the rule of law. That's the man, that's the second in command of the Justice Department. And then he talks about the rule of law and conflicts, clip three.
The Department of Justice is, as you just mentioned, a part of the executive branch, but it is also the entity charged with enforcing the rule of law. Given how human nature works, there are certain to be conflicts between the two. Can you tell us how you go about managing those conflicts?
Conflicts between which?
The rule of law and certain demands made by the chief executive.
No, there are no such conflicts.
No, I'm just saying that this is part of human nature.
Right.
I mean, it's
There's just no such There's no such conflicts. Let's listen to Matt Gaetz as he closes out his conversation last night. Clip seven.
And who's out there trying to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula, to face down Iran, and he's having to deal with this this ludicrous investigation that was never based on fact, where there's been no evidence of collusion, and which, by the way, if there even was a prosecution, Rod Rosenstein would be a witness based on on the questions that were released about James Comey's firing. So you can't oversee an investigation when you could potentially be a witness in that investigation. These aren't things that are nuts. We just want the law to be followed.
All right, coming up next, there are elections starting next Tuesday, and we have a responsibility to do it, get it right. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
80% of the time, an abortion-minded mother who views an ultrasound or sonogram of her baby will choose life. Here's the story of Candace.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
There are currently preborn centers which do not have an ultrasound machine. Would you sponsor a machine today? Dial pound 250 and say keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love can save a life.
Since the day the American Family Association began asking you to sign a petition urging the cancellation of 13 Reasons Why, Netflix has made some changes. They've added disclaimers before episodes and even a link to a suicide prevention hotline number. This is progress, but it's not enough. If you have signed the petition, thank you. If you haven't, please do. Netflix continues to ignore our request for a meeting to discuss the dangers of their show. And they're still going forward with the release of season 2 of this dangerous program. Too many teens have taken their own lives after watching 13 Reasons Why, a program which seems to suggest suicide as a viable option. Your signature and prayers could help convince Netflix to reconsider their social responsibility. Even one more teen suicide would be infinitely too many. Please read and sign the Netflix petition at afa.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Andrew Minnick is a student at the University of Illinois. He is also a conservative, the president of the university's Turning Point USA chapter. He also happens to serve in student government, the chair of the Committee of Diversity and Inclusion. A while back, Andrew took part in a vigil to honor Americans who had been victims of illegal immigration. Because of his participation, his fellow students brought him up on charges, accusing him of marginalizing minorities. There was a vote, and the student government decided to impeach Andrew just because of his conservative beliefs. One student government leader called Turning Point USA a racist group, and the impeachment of Andrew was righting a wrong. A young man punished for ascribing to the wrong beliefs, all for the sake of diversity and inclusivity. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
There are not many Hillary Clinton fans in coal country. She lost West Virginia by 42 points. So now Congressman Evan Jenkins is out with an ad accusing a primary opponent, Attorney General Patrick Morrisey, of being one of them.
Morrisey refused to support Trump over Hillary.
A picture is worth a thousand words, and this picture is also fake. Now the Attorney General is tweeting, despicable, at Evan Jenkins WV, photoshopped my photo with @RealDonaldTrump and substituted it with Hillary, who I have always strongly opposed. Will the media call out Jenkins for his lying and dishonesty? Where is the accountability as this liar tries to deceive voters? Jenkins says he has no regrets about the edited picture.
That picture speaks volumes of exactly what Patrick Morrisey was. He was a never-Trumper. He wouldn't vote for Donald Donald Trump in the primary.
Morrissey is accumulating out-of-town endorsements from the editors of the National Review, Senator Ted Cruz, and Senator Rand Paul, who will join Morrissey on the trail this week. His campaign argues he's got the most conservative record of anybody running and that, quote, when voters find out about Patrick's defeat of President Obama's war on coal, Patrick's efforts to expand gun rights, and Patrick's protection of unborn life, they are eager to support his candidacy. A group with ties to GOP leadership is spending big to boost either Morrissey or Jenkins. The Mountain Families PAC has already spent $1.3 million on ads against Republican Don Blankenship, who is still on probation after a year in jail for a misdemeanor conviction tied to the Upper Big Branch mine explosion that killed 29.
I think it probably moves me up a little bit because I don't think that Mitch McConnell realizes how anti-him and how anti-the-establishment West Virginians are.
All right, that was Peter Ducey in his report a few nights ago. Actually, last night, there was a debate between the candidates for Senate in West Virginia, and you might remember that Joe Manchin holds that seat right now. And according to the latest polls, he has his job approval ratings have been plummeting. Now, what that means, relatively speaking, I'm not sure, but it's a 17-point drop from the fourth quarter. And so that means these three Republicans who are vying for that seat aren't working hard. Now, let me just say, put this in context. I just told you some dreadful things in the opening segment that create so much frustration, at least they do for me. I am just about to actually burst a gasket over what's happening in this country. Are you not? And the only way we can really fight back, apart from telling our friends and sharing information, is to vote in the upcoming primaries. And as I said to you many times before, it's the primaries where conservatives, real conservatives, have the best opportunity to win. There is a primary next Tuesday. It's going to be in West Virginia, Ohio, Indiana, and North Carolina. And I've asked Ken Cuccinelli, the head of Senate Conservatives Fund, to join me this morning to kind of help us think through the puzzle of this upcoming primary. Ken, thanks for joining me.
Sandy, it's always great to be with you. I would add one other thing people can do, though, and that's not even throwing prayer in there, and that is donate. You know, these Senate races are national races. For instance, if you want to fight abortion, if you want to fight taxes, I'm in Virginia. I have a better shot of helping, in my case, Patrick Morrissey next door in West Virginia than I do perhaps of winning in Virginia. So, but I still get my vote in the Senate, right? It may not be my senator, but that is another thing your listeners can do is donate to these folks. And you certainly started out with some interesting points that Evan Jenkins had with Hillary Clinton. There's one more irony to that little dirty trick that Evan Jenkins is pulling there, and that is that he was a Democrat until 2013. He supported Hillary Clinton against Barack Obama, supported Hillary Clinton against Barack Obama in 2008, and voted for Obama in 2008 and 2012 for president. And here he is making up and having to doctor photos to try to lie about Patrick Morrissey being a Hillary Clinton fan, which is quite the opposite of the truth. And not just with respect to Patrick, but the real irony is that Evan Jenkins actually was a Hillary Clinton supporter.
Now, he's a sitting congressman, isn't he? And he's ahead in the polls, right? He's ahead in the polls, at least as well, before last night's debate.
He and Morrissey have each showed up ahead in different polls. But they're both basically within the margin of error. Don Blankenship, the third name that you all introduced, was really very near the front. He has a lot of his own money to spend, but I think a lot of West Virginians are facing up to the fact that his year in jail for mine safety violations in the upper mine explosion that was just over 8 years ago, it killed 29 people. And look, whatever may have gone on there, it's awfully hard to see how Blankenship could beat Manchin carrying that kind of baggage in a coal state. It's just impossible to see. So I think a lot of West Virginia voters are facing up to that, and so Blankenship is fading in the polls, and this is becoming a race between conservative Attorney General Patrick Morrissey, who, by the way, just yesterday yesterday with five other AGs filed a lawsuit to end the DACA program. So, you know, he puts his money where his mouth is. And Jenkins, like I said, was a Democrat for 20 years or however long he was in office before running for Congress as a Republican. He supported cap and trade. He supported tax increases. He supported funding for Planned Parenthood. He supported Hillary Clinton. He voted for Barack Obama in West Virginia. And he's trying to masquerade now as a conservative. You know, I know you cover, Sandy, like the House Freedom Caucus. You cover the leadership contests related to the House. You've never heard Evan Jenkins' name in any of that, have you? He's never challenged the leadership on one thing. He's been a go-along, get-along, newborn Republican who's really a Democrat in a Trump state.
Did I understand correctly last night in that debate that he's taking money from McConnell's PAC?
McConnell's PAC, they seem to have set up a PAC to go after Blankenship because they were worried that if Blankenship wins the nomination, that, I mean, he can't beat Manchin, period. So it takes West Virginia off the table. If you set conservative aside for the moment, something that I know neither you or I do very often, and just think about it from a Republican perspective, the more states where Republicans are competitive with the incumbent Democrat, the harder it is for all the incumbent Democrats because there's less money for each of them, right? So the McConnell notion there is simply that they don't want Blankenship. McConnell seems to have figured out what a pariah he is, how we all loathe the leadership so-called leadership he provides. So if he came out and supported Jenkins openly, that it would probably hurt Jenkins. Certainly Blankenship and Morrissey would use it against Jenkins in the same way Roy Moore used it against Luther Strange in Alabama. So it's a little different strategy from the leadership now.
All right, so for a follow-up on this, if people want information, they can go to Senate Conservatives Fund for your information on the candidates in West Virginia.
We've endorsed Patrick Morrissey, and you can find more out about him, senateconservatives.com. We would urge people to donate. This election is next Tuesday, the 8th. It's coming up fast. Other elections that day include Indiana and Ohio. So that's the next round of primaries around the country is coming up next Tuesday.
All right, I'm going to let you choose which state you'd like to talk about next, which you think is the most crucial to discuss or closest, critical, whatever, fill in the blank.
Well, you know, we'll call it timely. The most timely one is now Montana, which is a June 5th primary with Matt Rosendale, because the president has started to lay in to John Tester, the incumbent Democrat there. You know, here's a guy who probably more than any other incumbent Democrat goes home to try to convince them he's conservative while doing more against the conservative agenda in Washington than most others. He voted, of course, against the tax bill. He's repeatedly voted against Trump's nominees, judicial nominees, and so forth, Gorsuch. And recently he was maligning Ronnie Jackson, the vice admiral that the president put up for VA secretary. And several of his smears have rather quickly been disproven, and the president just has jumped on him for it and has really brought a lot of attention in Montana to an incumbent who really wanted to stay below the radar as he faces a really talented and accomplished conservative in the state auditor there, Matt Rosendale, the only statewide elected official, I think, who's really fought Obamacare, for instance, in Montana, offers a great opportunity there.
That's really interesting. Now, was that on the radar before? Was John Tester's race on the radar for conservatives before?
I mean, Senate Conservatives Fund has endorsed Rosendale in about a five-way primary, and other groups have supported him, but it just hasn't gotten the attention outside the state that other races have, like West Virginia. I mean, the president went to West Virginia a few weeks ago, and he, just like we were talking about Blankenship, Morrissey was there sitting next to him, so was Jenkins. They made it clear they didn't want Blankenship. That is the most pro-Trump state in the country, West Virginia. But Montana the president has a net favorable rating of 50 to 46. He's positive there. He is a force to be reckoned with in that election for a conservative candidate. And, you know, so there are a few states like that. North Dakota, Kevin Cramer is the Republican nominee. He's not a conservative, but he's very pro-Trump. So the president, you might reasonably expect to be up there quite a bit to try to take that state from Heidi Heitkamp and Josh Hawley in Missouri. Neck and neck with Claire McCaskill. She has a ton more money, but he's neck and neck there in a state that Trump won by, I want to say, 9 points. And he's a Federalist Society lawyer. Josh Hawley was doing religious liberty cases before he ever thought about running for office. He is one of us. There are a lot of opportunities like that around the country this year. Really extraordinary year in the Senate races. While we're struggling...
I just wanted to underscore something you said earlier, because I want to make this practical for people listening. You know, I was in the state of Illinois. That's my home state. And as you know, we've had no choices for years about senators. It's been a long time,
right,
since probably Peter Fitzgerald. And so people may be in those kinds of states wondering what they can do. And the point Ken made earlier was that you can support candidates from other states. The senators represent you no matter where they're from. And so if you don't have someone
That's
in your
right.
state coming up, you can give money. You can support them another way. You can make phone calls. You can travel to the state and go door to door. There are a lot of things you can do. So let me just say SenateConservatives.com is Ken's website if you'd like to help them, because they do identify a conservative, truly. Three-legged conservative, as we say, social, economic, and
that's right.
What was the third one?
Foreign policy, that's right.
Yeah, so anyway, so that's that. Okay, so we only have a few minutes left here, Ken. I want to make the most of our time. Ohio has an important governor's race on Tuesday. You want to just say something about that?
Yeah, so you've got Mike DeWine, a former attorney general with me, is the leading moderate candidate. And the ticket there with Mary and Nathan Estruth is outstanding. I mean, it is a picture of conservatives. And these are folks who have been engaged fighting for conservative principles for years, including putting money up. It's really a great opportunity to see someone, and oddly enough, a lot of us are pretty motivated by Nathan Estruth, who is the lieutenant governor candidate on the conservative ticket there, and you know, we're very excited to see that opportunity come through. Mike DeWine is a well-known candidate. Mike is, you know, I'd say he's a nice guy, but the reality is, he is as moderate as they come. And, you know, the current lieutenant governor, Mary Taylor, is really a down-the-line conservative. And, of course, it's always great. We're not for affirmative action in the movement, but it's always great when your rock star conservatives also check other boxes. It'd be great to have a woman who is governor who's as conservative as Mary Taylor, who had the wisdom to pick someone as conservative and with such a track record as Nathan Estruth for her lieutenant governor candidate. What a change that would be from John Kasich. Oh, my gosh. What a change that would be.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure the people of Oklahoma who... you know, had a big part in putting Trump in the White House, so be happy for that kind of change, knowing how Kasich opposed him. We have to say just a word about
That's
that
right.
Senate race. Josh, we only have a minute left, Ken. I'm going to turn it to you.
Give
Josh us 30
Mandel,
seconds.
Unfortunately, got out. The president seemed to indicate support for Congressman Renacci, but he has really not distinguished himself in Congress. He hasn't been a conservative. Mike Gibbons is a businessman in that race who has been hammering away at Mitch McConnell, which is always a good sign, somebody who's willing to come and fight in Washington. But he is untested as an elected official. So it's a tough choice there between Renacci and Gibbons. If you want to fight McConnell, Gibbons is your guy. If you just want to support President Trump, he seems to like Renacci. But we don't have the kind of conservative option in that race that we do in the governor's race with Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor.
We're out of time. I'm sorry. SenateConservatives.com. SenateConservatives.com.
The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. What is the proper role of government? Romans chapter 13 outlines government's function, and it is basically this: to restrain or to punish wickedness and to reward righteousness. Government was never intended to be our savior. Government is our servant. As we focus on our civil occupations and our civic engagement responsibilities, let us never forget that government is not our God. We don't put our trust in it. We put our trust in our Christ. As a result, what we want is a government that stays out of our way and leaves room for our church to do our business of fulfilling the Great Commission.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Who is God? What is He like? How can we know? Your answer to these questions will impact your worship, discipleship, apologetics, and evangelism. Learn from Ravi Zacharias, Josh McDowell, Chip Ingram, and more than 60 other speakers at Southern Evangelical Seminary's 25th Annual National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 12th and 13th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Get the early bird discount when you register by August 1st at ses.edu.
Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth
has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples
of all nations."
This is Bert Harper. Join me for Exploring Missions, revealing the hearts of missionaries, their stories, and lives. Across the world or across town, Exploring Missions, Saturday evenings at 6:30 Central and Sunday afternoons at 1 on American Family Radio.
American Family Association, a ministry with a mission to inform, equip, and activate people like you to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture and to give aid to the church here and abroad in her task of fulfilling the Great Commission. We couldn't do it without your day-to-day support. Together, we are making a difference. American Family Association. Find us online at afa.net.
We live in a day where we have the greatest evidence of the reliability of the text of the New Testament at the very time there's the greatest skepticism about it.
Information is not all that's needed to prove the authenticity of Scripture. We need understanding as well. Author and apologist Dr. James White offers plenty of both in the AFA Cultural Institute DVD, The Reliability of the New Testament. You'll find this resource and much more when you visit afastore.net.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Heart of Nuba is a critically acclaimed film documenting in microcosm the horrific but largely unremarked outrage of our time, the brutal persecution of an estimated 215 million Christians around the world. The film reveals the plight of the people of the Nuba Mountains in Sudan and American Dr. Tom Katena, who has for over a decade been heroically caring for these latest victims of genocidal attacks by the Sharia supremacist Sudanese government of Omar al-Bashir. There's a screening of Heart of Nuba in Washington, D.C. tonight. It would be good if former House Speaker John Boehner would attend. He's been paid handsomely to lobby on behalf of Sudan's pariah dictator and indicted war criminal. The film's director, Ken Carlson, will be taking questions. I'm sure his audience would have a few as well for Bashir's enabler, the erstwhile Speaker Boehner. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The White House did weigh in today in a charge from President Trump's former physician, Dr. Harold Bornstein, that in February of last year, his office was raided by then-director of Oval Office Operations Keith Schiller and Trump Organization attorney Alan Garten. Bornstein says they took all of President Trump's medical records.
That's how I feel. Raped, frightened.
The incident happened 2 days after Bornstein told the New York Times President Trump takes Propecia for hair loss. The White House today dismissed the notion of a raid.
As a standard operating procedure for a new president, the White House medical unit took possession of the president's medical records.
That was the most bizarre story that came out yesterday. Did any of you see Dr. Harold Bornstein? That was just a clip, very short clip of what he said. He felt raped and frightened when President Donald Trump's three people came to pick up his medical records. He felt his office was raided, and that happened like a year ago. I wondered if he filed a police report. Sounded pretty violent, right? They came to get his medical records, and of course, as Sarah Huckabee Sanders explained, his current White House physician, Ronnie, whatever his last name is, I can't remember in the moment, had written a request to transfer those medical records. But as we look into this, Dr. Bornstein was upset because President Trump would not allow him to be the White House physician. He actually says it in writing in an interview. He's very upset because he said he recalled that he had told Rona Graff, Trump's longtime assistant, you know, I should be the White House physician. But then he talked to the press, to the New York Times, and told them that he had prescribed Propecia. Is it Propecia? I don't take it, so I don't know. A drug for enlarged prostate, said it's often prescribed to stimulate hair growth in men. So he tells the New York Times that he's prescribed that to Donald Trump. And 3 days later, Donald Trump's people come to his office to get Donald Trump's medical records. And it's my understanding they have this permission from this request for transfer from the White House physician. And I think that Bornstein sort of tips his hand in this. I'm reading to you from an NBC News article, which is happy to make this sound as though it's some sort of a raid, you know, this horrible, he said he's raped. He feels raped, you know, this doctor feels raped because they came to pick up President Trump's medical records. That's what he said. But he says in this article, Bornstein said he is speaking out now after seeing reports that Ronnie Jackson, who has allegedly been called the Candy Man, and by the way, this article is written long after we know that that's a total fabrication, those accusations against Dr. Ronnie Jackson, that calling him the Candy Man. But let me go back. Bornstein said he is speaking out now after seeing reports that Dr. Ronnie Jackson, who has allegedly been called the Candy Man for loosely prescribing pain medications as White House doctor, will not return to his post after being considered to run the Department of Veterans Affairs. Bornstein says, this is like a celebration for me. So I'm sure that Dr. Bornstein has no motive, you know, for speaking out the way he is and calling this a raid and saying that he felt raped. It's just amazing. There's just nothing the left won't say to try to destroy this president. And he gets betrayed. It's amazing, actually, that he doesn't get betrayed more than he does. But that's what happened also yesterday. I just thought it was really interesting. But the one thing I want to bring to your attention that I think is alarming beyond measure. I've hinted at this, but I haven't talked about it much. I don't feel an expert at this, but I can certainly repeat what my understanding is, and I'm certainly seeing it myself. I mentioned to you just a few days ago that I'm seeing we're having trouble. Some of us are having trouble just sending email. The Ear to the Ground Listening Project is a project whereby we will be polling the nation and their attitudes about the upcoming election and various things like that. There's nothing, you know, insidious about this project. And yet, every time it's mentioned in an email, the email won't go through. In fact, I told you about a poll that just came out. It was John McLaughlin we partnered with John McLaughlin on that poll. And when I tried to send that poll, tried to send an article about the poll with a link, it wouldn't go through. And it comes up tagged, this Ear to the Ground may be, I forgot exactly how it puts it. Basically, it's dangerous, risky, we can't send that. I don't know, fill in the blank. So that's on a Gmail account. So now we turn to Facebook. So Facebook started yesterday. They launched an initiative where they ask every user to identify hate speech. So, what's this? This must be BuzzFeed. I'm not sure, but this is Tyler O'Neill writing. He shows us several examples. Like, here's one from PJ Media, and it's just here's the post. Christians need to laugh at themselves. The Babylon Bee author tells PJ Media. And at the bottom of it, Facebook puts, does this post contain hate speech? Yes or no? So then there's one titled, LGB activists insist Nancy Pelosi could be president in 2019. The bottom, does this contain hate speech? National Review, leakers, if Hillary Clinton had won, does this post contain hate speech? Yes or no? You're supposed to weigh in on it. HuffPost. National top teachers verbally spar with Betsy DeVos in a private meeting, and then does this contain hate speech? All right, you get the point. And so Facebook has been asked about this, and I want to read you their response. It's down. It's gone now. It appeared, and then it left. And their response basically is, hang on a second. Some people challenge them. In fact, Joshua Herring, who's a humanities instructor at Tales Academy, a contributor for the Imaginative Conservative and the Federalists, ask, what the heck, Facebook? Why are you asking if I'm committing hate speech? And the response that they got was, this was an internal test we were working on to understand different types of speech, including speech we thought would not be hate. A bug caused it to launch publicly. It's been disabled. All right, so you feel better now, right? Well, don't feel better, because this is a process. Facebook is going on an aggressive, all-out assault on conservative media. And I will fill in the blanks right here with you right now. This is Mark Zuckerberg appeared at a conference, which his remarks are supposed to have been off the record. So let me see if I can. I'm going to read some of these to you. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg said Tuesday that the company has already begun to implement a system that ranks news organizations based on trustworthiness and promotes or suppresses its content based on that metric. Zuckerberg said the company has gathered data on how consumers perceive news brands by asking them to identify whether they have heard of various publications and if they trust them. We put that data into the system, and it is acting as a boost or a suppression. And we're going to dial up the intensity of that over time. We feel like we have a responsibility to further down polarization and find common ground. The meeting was at the Rosewood Sand Hill Hotel in Menlo Park. It included representatives from BuzzFeed News, Quartz, The New York Times, CNN, Wall Street Journal, NBC, Univision, Barron's, The Daily Beast, The Economist, HuffPost, Insider, and Atlantic, and others. The event, called Off the Record, is an annual gathering meant for new media news executives to talk shop. It is in its second year. Zuckerberg's remarks were initially meant to be, like the name of the conference, Off the Record, but he agreed to answer questions on the record. Zuckerberg said the company will invest billions of dollars in a combination of artificial intelligence and tens of thousands of human moderators to keep both fake news and deliberate propaganda at bay, especially in elections. So, now, let me go back, because I'm not finished. I'm not finished. Let me just read this part to you. So, in January 2017, Facebook did start changing their algorithms. I have mentioned this, but you have to hear it and you have to listen. They have done this in such a way that conservative organizations and outlets have seen their traffic plummet as much as half, by 50%. And while secular, leaning news outlets have seen their traffic increase, that's not an accident. It is on purpose. In March 2018, Western Journal also, this is what I got my information from, published a study that found conservative publishers were hit hardest in the recent Facebook algorithm changes. The report found that liberal publishers actually saw a 2% increase in traffic. Conservative publishers lost an average of 14%. And some, as I told you, many have experienced half their list. That's an average. Facebook official Campbell Brown, a former anchor on NBC and CNN, Let's read that again. Facebook official Campbell Brown, former anchor on NBC and CNN, I'm sure she has no opinion about who should be targeted with these algorithms. I'm sure she doesn't. But she told attendees at a recent technology and publishing conference that Facebook would be censoring news publishers based on its internal biases. And they did. In his announcement on Tuesday, Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg announced that Facebook will ramp up its censorship of controversial political content. But wait, there's more. This, I believe, is from BuzzFeed. It's from Ben Smith. Yeah. So this is what else Mark Zuckerberg said. The big miss is we didn't expect these kind of coordinated information operations in 2016, said Zuckerberg, and that the company was more focused on hacking and malware. He said the company is expecting that kind of information more now and has already successfully countered it in elections from France to Alabama. We deployed all tools, AL tools, I think is what it's not all, AL. We employed AL tools that have taken down tens of thousands of accounts, he said, of those elections. Remember, we're talking France and Alabama. He talks about WhatsApp. You know what? Now I'm talking about something I don't know anything about. I've heard of this. Many of you may use it. I'm sorry. I have to speak about something I don't know anything about. But Zuckerberg also said he remains committed to encryption on WhatsApp and described it as a source of pride. WhatsApp wasn't fully encrypted when we bought it. We rolled out encryption after we bought it. We run the largest fully encrypted communications network in the world. So this is what's going to be happening. They're going to make sure that they're already doing this, that they will prevent news from most, let's just say, a lot of conservative organizations, maybe all. I don't know. We'll see, won't we, as this unfolds. They're already doing it. They're stopping them from getting their information out by changing the algorithms, and they plan to do more. They were successful in France. They were successful in Alabama. Thank you, Facebook. And remember, do I need to remind you that the American people have grown to depend on Facebook to get their message out? In fact, it says, my understanding is most people now get their news from Facebook. Well, oh, that's the other thing. Mark Zuckerberg is planning now on spending more money on investigative reporting from Facebook. So they're going to present the news to you. And don't worry, it will be common ground. It won't be anything that, you know, it's going to, you know, make sure you don't hear any hate speech like you hear on this show every day. I'm expecting this. They've tried this. They've tried censoring conservative voices on radio for a long time. That's gone quiet, but don't expect it to stay quiet. It may be that we may end up being your last bastion of honest information that we won't be able to share on social media. You'll just have to listen, and then they'll come after us on the mic. That's how this is going to happen. By the way, if you don't believe me, there's a great article by Gatestone about Facebook's censorship in Germany, and it's based on a case in which Swiss daily Basler Zeitung posted an article with the title "Viktor Orban Speaks of Muslim Invasion" on its Facebook side. The blurb read, "Viktor Orban wonders how in a country like Germany, chaos, anarchy, and illegal crossing of borders can be celebrated as something good." Facebook user Gabor B. posted a comment, "Germans are becoming increasingly stupid. No wonder, since the left-wing media litters them every day with fake news about skilled workers, declining unemployment figures, or Trump." What happened? Mr. Gabor B., the Facebook user, was banned from Facebook for 30 days. This is what's happening in Europe, and this is what they want to do here. And I think so far they're having marvelous, stellar success. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.